You are Locked On Orioles, your daily Baltimore Orioles podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey there, Orioles fans. Today is Wednesday, August 25th, 2021, and welcome back in to the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Connor Newcomb, and coming up on today's episode, wouldn't you know it, the Orioles lost again. This one stung a little bit more than others. It was over early, and it was bad as the Orioles fall 14-8 to the Los Angeles Angels in game one of a three-game series, making it 19 losses in a row for the O's. So we'll break it down, get you the five things you need to know from Tuesday night's loss. Then we'll take a look at the newest Oriole. That is Chris Ellis, the right-handed pitcher who the Orioles claimed off waivers from the Tampa Bay Rays last week. And we're going to be joined by Kyle Reese, who's been on this podcast once before. He actually covers very heavily and very well the Cardinals minor league system, and Chris Ellis, who has been with a lot of organizations in his career, actually spent the most time in his career with the Cardinals. He was in AA and AAA with the Cards for three full seasons, 2017 through 2019. Never made it to the big leagues with them, but did spend his most time there, and Kyle saw him pitch more than a few times and joins us to talk about the pitcher Ellis was then compared to the pitcher he is now as he finally makes it to the big leagues. Then we will get you ready for game two of the series tonight between the Orioles and the Angels. And it might get worse as it's Ohtani versus an Orioles bullpen day as 20 losses seem right there for the taking. But that is all coming up on this episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast, which is brought to you by Spotify Green Room. Download the app and join me every week to talk Orioles and get in on the action at Spotify Green Room. Changing the way we talk sports. So we start today's episode with, surprise, surprise, another Orioles loss. They fall 14-8 to the Los Angeles Angels in game one of a three-game series at Camden Yards. 19 losses in a row for the Orioles now as they fall to 38-86 here on the season. This loss was bad, and I know it was bad because I didn't watch most of it. Had a softball game on Tuesday night, and the Orioles lost by the same score that we won our softball game, 14-8. You're not supposed to play games that are the same scores as slow pitch softball, but that is what the Orioles did on Tuesday night. And we're gonna get you the five things you need to know from the Orioles 14-8 loss. And the first thing is the experiment on Spencer Watkins is pretty much done at this point. Watkins gets the start on Tuesday night, his final line. He goes just two-plus innings, allowing 8 runs on 7 hits. He did strike out 3 and didn't walk anybody and only allowed 1 home run, but only got 47 pitches in there. His ERA skyrockets to 7.07 on the season after this one. And, you know, after 3 or 4 pretty solid starts to start his career for the O's, you know, things have been trending downward, but he wasn't absolutely terrible or anything like that. But this was just unwatchable again. Again, a good Angels offense, but not an elite, you know, top 5 in baseball offense. This was an Angels team that just scored 2 runs in 3 games when they were swept by Cleveland over the weekend. And for Watkins, it's basically just been the last 3 starts. It's gone downhill. 4 innings, 6 runs against the Red Sox, 4 innings, 4 runs against Tampa. Now the 2 innings, 8 runs against the Angels. I have to say, I mean, you know, the Orioles have already currently an open rotation spot after moving Jorge Lopez to the bullpen. They're not exactly filling it, as they've already said. They're going to go with a bullpen game in that spot tonight instead of naming a starter. So there's already 1 starting spot open, but I would open up 2, to be honest with you. And at this point, I would give Alex Wells one of those spots, call him up. And, you know, Zach Lowther is making rehab appearances in Aberdeen. He's, you know, a week or two away from being good and ready to go. I mean, I'd give Zach Lowther that other spot. I would easily give it to a guy like Alex Wells at this point. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody like Thomas Eshelman was recalled to maybe make one of these starts for the Orioles. I mean, you just, what Spencer Watkins is doing, just can't throw it out there anymore. And I tweeted at the beginning of the game, I thought this was the night. Watkins starts his night by striking out Shohei Ohtani to start the game, top of the first inning. Beautiful backdoor cutter. Ohtani had just kind of an emergency hack when he knew it was going to be a strike and swung right through it. And I thought, this is going to go well. He had a 1-2-3 first inning. Ryan Mountcastle gives him a homer in the bottom of the first. He's got the lead in the second. He gets the first out. And then what happens? Well, things fall apart on an 0-2 great breaking ball to Jose Iglesias in the dirt, swings and misses. Of course, it skips away from Pedro Severino. Where have we seen that? Iglesias reaches on the drop third strike with one out, and then the chaos ensues. The Angels score 5 runs in the second. They get 3 more in the third, and your ball game is over at that point. And for Watkins, you know, we could break down what really went wrong on the day for him. I mean, he did get 5 whiffs on 47 pitches. That's pretty solid. 3 on the cutter, 2 on the curveball. But really what you have to say is it was a lot of 91-mile-per-hour fastballs down the middle, and the Angels hit them all. And that is basically what happened to Spencer Watkins on Tuesday. Second thing you need to know from the Orioles' 14-8 loss to the Angels is Fernando Abad saved a lot of arms in the Orioles bullpen. I mean, you got to give him credit for what he did on Tuesday night. Abad goes 3 1/3 scoreless innings out of the bullpen, allowing 3 hits. He struck out 3. He walked just 1. And it took him just 42 pitches to get those 10 outs, which is a pretty impressive number from a reliever as well. And just shout out to Fernando Abad. It was his longest appearance in the major leagues since 2012. That was back when he was still a starter at the major league level. In a September 2012 game was the last time he threw more than 3 1/3 innings in a game. He was throwing everything out there, you know, the fastball, the curveball, the changeup. He was mixing his pitches pretty well and was able to kind of roll through those 3 1/3 and really save the O's pen, because the initial long reliever that Brandon Hyde went to was Connor Wade, which was the, you know, perfect call. Wade had been pitching pretty well since he got recalled. He, of course, has been a starter his whole life in the minor leagues. So after Spencer Watkins goes 2 innings, Wade is the easy choice. Well, Wade gave up 5 runs in just 1 1/3. So after your long reliever can't get anybody out, you got to have somebody who's not a usual long reliever pick up some innings. That is exactly what Abad did with 10 huge outs. And I know it was a blowout and the Orioles lose, whatever, but that is huge for saving the pen for the next couple of days and not making the Orioles make a lot more roster moves in terms of pitching. Third thing you need to know, sticking with the pitching, Marcos Duplan, sadly, finally gave up his first earned run of his Major League Baseball career. He went 1 1/3 in relief on Tuesday night, allowed 1 run on 3 hits, struck out 2, no walks, and his ERA is now .73 on the season. Almost got himself out of it. You know, he came in the 7th inning and got a strikeout to end the frame with 2 outs. Then he came back out there in the 8th. There were 2 on, 2 outs. He was facing David Fletcher. Had a chance to get out of it with a 0, but Fletcher, as he always does, just grounded a kind of a soft base hit up the middle for an RBI single to, at that point, make it a 14-8 game. And the Duplan perfect ERA ends, but he still got good stuff, and I like seeing him out there out of the Orioles bullpen. Fourth thing you need to know from the game is that two guys were heating up for the Orioles. My goodness, they really carry the load for the O's. Ryan Mountcastle and Anthony Santander were sizzling on Tuesday night. Mountcastle with a 2-for-5, 2 solo home runs for him in the game. He hit one in the first that made it a 1-0 game, and he hit another one in the 6th that made it 13-6 at that point, and was a part of the Orioles' comeback. But the bigger part of the Orioles trying to come back was Anthony Santander, a 4-for-5 night for the Oriole right fielder. He had 2 doubles, he had a homer, he had 3 RBIs, he scored 3 runs on the night. He was huge in the 5th and 6th innings. Of course, the Orioles were down 13-2, but then they got 3 in the 5th, they got 3 in the 6th on Tuesday night's game, and tried to make this somewhat of a comeback in a closer game. You know, got it from 13-2 to 13-8 pretty quickly. But Santander was just lashing the ball. His 2-run home run in the 6th inning went out onto Utah Street. The 2 doubles were ripped as well. And again, he still doesn't look, when he's running, like he's exactly 100% at this point, but this was at least much, much better from Santander. You've got Mountcastle, whose 2 home runs give him 23 on the season. He has now taken the team lead in home runs. And Cal Ripken Jr.'s record for an Orioles rookie in a season is 28 home runs, which he set back in 1982. Mountcastle only 5 away from tying that at this point, with still over a month to go in the season. I'd like to predict that Ryan Mountcastle is going to break that 28 home run record for Orioles rookies here this year. And the fifth and final thing you need to know from the Orioles' loss is that Jorge Mateo actually left the game in this one with lower back discomfort. And, you know, this was after he had continued to hit the ball for the O's. He was 2-for-2 in this game with a couple of infield singles for the Orioles, continues to just hit incredibly well. And it's not like he's hit for a lot of power, but just keeps getting on base since the Orioles claimed him from the Padres. And this would be a pretty big loss to have right now for the Orioles. I mean, with the moves that they made on Monday with DFAing Michael Franco and sending Richie Martin down, of course, calling up Jamai Jones and Kelvin Gutierrez, they basically showed us that Mateo may be an everyday infielder for the Orioles for the rest of the season because they really want to get a look at the 26-year-old infielder. But he leaves with a back injury. He was replaced in the game by Gutierrez, who ended up going 0-for-2 in his return to the Orioles. We will see. Hopefully this is just, a day-to-day thing for Mateo, and, he can be back this weekend or whatever it may be. But, it's weird to say a guy they claimed off waivers from the Padres a couple of weeks ago is a player the Orioles need, but he is a player the Orioles need in the lineup right now. And to be honest, if he has to go on the injured list, Richie Martin's probably coming right back up to the big leagues. But either way, it was another Orioles loss. They fall 14-8. They've now lost 19 games in a row. But they do have a little help on the pitching side coming. And, the Orioles said that, they're not naming exactly a starter for tonight's game two against the Angels. Now, the Angels are going with Shohei Ohtani on the mound. The Orioles, who would have started Jorge Lopez in this game, but of course officially moved him to the bullpen over the weekend. Brandon Hyde, instead of calling up a different starter or putting someone in that spot, is just calling it a bullpen game for the Orioles. And because of that, we are likely to see the Orioles' newest arm make his Orioles debut. That is the 28-year-old right-hander Chris Ellis, who the Orioles claimed off waivers from the Tampa Bay Rays last week after Ellis made one appearance in the majors with the Rays this year. It was actually against the Orioles during this losing streak, in which he pitched 4 scoreless innings in relief against the O's, allowed 3 hits, struck out 7, and walked just 1. The Orioles saw he was pretty good, and they made the claim on him. So we should see him pitch tonight, so you're going to want to learn more about him before he takes the mound for the Orioles for the first time. And to do just that, we are going to be joined by Kyle Reese. He is a Cardinals minor league reporter covering all things Cardinal system for Birds on the Black. Reese has been on this podcast once before to talk about Ramon Arias last year, but Kyle's going to join us to talk about Chris Ellis and his minor league career, where he has actually been with a lot of organizations because of trades and waiver claims and whatnot, but he has spent the most time in his career with the St. Louis Cardinals. 2017 through 2019, he pitched in AA and AAA with St. Louis. Kyle covered him then and talks all about what his stuff looked like back then, what kind of pitcher he was, what happened to him when the Cardinals transitioned him from a starter to a reliever, and why it didn't work out then versus why it's seemingly working out better now for him as he has gotten to the big league. So that's all coming up with Kyle Reese of Birds on the Black as we talk about the newest Orioles right-handed pitcher, Chris Ellis, right after this break. So we'll get to our conversation about the newest Oriole, Chris Ellis, in just a second, but first, this episode is brought to you by Spotify Green Room. Spotify Green Room is the first social audio platform made for sports fans. The app is free to download, and once you're in, you can talk with me, other fans, athletes, and insiders in real time about your favorite team or sport. I'll be hosting rooms for Locked On Orioles once a week. Yes, you can finally join in on the conversation you listen to here every day. Green Room is the perfect place to start or join conversations about the league. You'll find fans just like you on Green Room for watch parties, debates, post-game breakdowns, and of course reacting to the big news or rumors. So go download the free Green Room app now, currently available on all iOS devices. Be sure to create a profile, link your Twitter, and join the MLB group for the latest league updates. And follow me at Connor Newcomb to be notified when my room goes live. I know you won't want to miss it, as I'm planning to be live every single week. I can't wait to hear everyone's thoughts on the Orioles. See you there at Spotify Green Room, changing the way we talk sports. All right, so we welcome Kyle Reese back into the podcast. He covers the Cardinals minor league system over at Birds on the Black. He's been on this pod once before, joined us back during the 2020 season to talk about Ramon Arias when the Orioles first called him up. Of course, Arias spent most of his time in the Cardinals system before coming over to the Orioles. And Arias, as you Orioles fans know, has been pretty good for the Birds so far. So the hope is that the same happens for Chris Ellis, but we will talk about that in a sec. First, Kyle, thank you so much for jumping back on the podcast.
Connor, it's my pleasure, man. I enjoyed this talk.
And so we have you on, as I mentioned, to talk about Chris Ellis, the 28-year-old right-handed pitcher who the Orioles claimed off waivers last week from the Tampa Bay Rays. Now, the Orioles know him a little bit because Ellis has made two career major league appearances. One of them came this year, just a couple of weeks ago, against the Orioles, his only appearance with the Rays before being DFA'd. He threw four scoreless innings in relief, three hits, seven strikeouts, one walk, the final four innings of a Tampa Bay win over the Orioles. So the O's got a front row seat to see Ellis. But the reason we have you on, Kyle, is because he also spent 3 years in the St. Louis system, which to this point is actually still the longest amount of time he has spent with any organization, and he has been with a good amount of orgs. So I first want to talk about, you know, him coming over to the Cardinals. He comes over in the Jaime Garcia trade back in December of 2016. They got John Gant in that trade as well, who of course was with the Cards for a long time, both in the rotation and out of the bullpen. So kind of when he came over, what was the expectation? And, you know, it seems like, at least when you look back at it now, he was not the headliner. It seems like John Gant was probably the headliner of that deal. But what were the thoughts on Ellis when he kind of first joined the organization in that first year there?
I think in general, Cardinals fans were disappointed with the haul that they got for Jaime Garcia, which was funny because at the time when the Cardinals traded Jaime Garcia, the Cardinal fans were pretty tired of Jaime Garcia as well. There's actually kind of a tradition of this with us. The Cardinals traded Matt Adams for a first base slash third base prospect named Juan Yepes to the Braves a couple years back too. And Cardinal fans lost their mind, and now Juan Yepes is knocking on the major league door as a 23-year-old utility player, and everybody can't wait to see this kid. And I like talking about that because I'm sure every fan base feels that way, right? When their mainstays get traded, unless it's a top prospect, you tend to be disappointed with the haul that your team gets back. But I think at the time, you know, John Gant had spent a little time with the Braves, and Luke Dykstra was the other player involved. And it seemed like Luke Dykstra had a chance to be maybe a utility infielder, which never manifested. But I think at the time of the trade, if you were to ask Cardinal fans, like who had the most potential of the three, that I think most of us probably would have looked at Chris Ellis as the guy. I think immediately thinking John Gant could help the Cardinals, but with the hope that Chris Ellis could be an innings eater for the Cardinals at some point. So just, you know, hindsight 2020, looking back in that moment, I would say that, yeah, John Gant was the headliner. John Gant was the known name, but the Cardinals thought that they had a pitcher in Chris Ellis at the time out of Ole Miss who had a potential to be a back of the rotation type innings eater.
Yeah, and he was, as you mentioned, a third-round pick out of Ole Miss by the Angels all the way back in 2014. He was traded quite a few times in his minor league career. I mean, he was in the Andrelton-Simmons deal at first. That's what got him to Atlanta. And then he went, of course, to the Cardinals. Now, he spends three seasons in the Cardinals organization, 2017, 18, and 19. Came over, went right to Double-A, and basically pitched in Double-A and Triple-A that entire time as a starting pitcher. So I have to ask, in those years he was in AAA, because he spent time in AAA in all three of those seasons, was there ever a time where he got really close to the bigs and you or others kind of felt like, you know, it was maybe coming soon that he was going to make that major league debut?
Not in my personal opinion. It just seemed like he was the type of pitcher who... So the other interesting thing about Chris Ellis is, when he was drafted, it seemed like when you read the scouting reports, he was a fastball curveball pitcher. And then as happens with a lot of pitchers, like the classifications of their pitching, their pitches change. So you might hear, oh, this guy throws a dynamite curveball in college. And then you find out that it's a slider or vice versa. Sometimes this happens. Well, in college, he was a fastball curve changeup guy. And then he kind of changed to be a fastball slider changeup guy. And he never really seemed to command any of it particularly well. And this was at the dawn of everyone throwing hard. So as everyone is now throwing 95, 96 miles an hour, he was throwing consistently 92, 93. And when you're a lefty, you can kind of get away with that. The Cardinals have a couple minor league pitchers right now that are highly thought of throwing them low 90s. consistently. When you're a righty, it's harder to get away with that. So it seemed like he was the type of player, the type of pitcher who was constantly trying to find his best repertoire while maybe toying a little too much with the mechanics that came with it and not having that upper, even that mid-tier velocity to get him to the next level. And it wasn't until, I believe, his last year with the Cardinals where he moved to the bullpen, and it just seemed like he was trying so hard to reach in and get that extra bit of velocity that he couldn't command the extra bit that he was trying to grab. So it just never really came together for him while he was a member of the Cardinals organization.
Yeah, I did want to ask about that move to the pen, if you knew more about it, because, you know, he did move to the pen, it seemed, you know, a little bit in 2018, but 2018 was far and away his best year with the Cardinals, 133 innings, about, he had a 3.93 ERA. That was mostly as a starter, 21 starts out of 31 appearances. And then the very next year, he only makes 7 starts out of 40 appearances, and he was bad. I mean, he had a 7.18 ERA in 79 innings that year. So, you know, was that just what it was, as you said, just kind of trying too hard with that stuff out of the bullpen? Did that move, you know, in those different roles hurt him? Like, you know, what kind of happened, if you can recall or really know what kind of happened to him between a really successful 2018 where, you know, he was picked in the Rule 5 draft and of course then returned a couple months later, and then to 2019 where, you know, he just kind of fell out of favor altogether?
Yeah, I think that's what it was. I remember watching some of those games and thinking that his mechanics were out of whack, that he was rushing himself. And I think that's pretty common when you're a young pitcher. And, you know, he's older, of course, as compared to what you might consider a quote-unquote young pitcher. But when a major league inexperienced pitcher starts to, at the minor leagues, toy with a velocity increase throughout their entire repertoire, not just with their fastball, I think it's easy to, A, rush yourself. And when you rush yourself, you throw your mechanics out of whack. And when you throw your mechanics out of whack, a lot of times you start throwing balls. You're not living in the zone enough. And I think between that, between not having a very strong feel for his change, and his change can have a lot of life. It's just that sometimes it doesn't get chased. So, it's, you know, not really playing with the changeup all that much, still trying to figure out the balance between the slider and the curveball. I just think it was just a lot going on for him, and maybe trying really hard to make an impression at the same time, knowing that as a relief arm, you can get to the majors really quick, even for a team like the Cardinals, who at the time had a lot of pitching depth, which is part of the reason why he moved to the bullpen instead of staying in the rotation.
And as I mentioned, you know, the Royals ended up taking him in the Rule 5 draft in 2018. They actually gave him his major league debut. He pitched one scoreless inning for the Royals out of the bullpen in April of 2019, and then they immediately pretty much returned him to the Cardinals. So it comes to the end of 2019. We get the, you know, cancellation of spring training and the delay of the season in 2020, and then the Cardinals end up releasing him, you know, after the really tough 2019. Was it kind of just at the point where that was not much of a surprise that the Cards made that move?
Yeah, I don't think anyone was surprised. I know, not much elaboration there. Sorry. No, that, it just seemed like the right time. He was older. The Cardinals had perceived pitching depth. They had a lot of younger guys knocking on the door. And they're always, the Cardinals 40 man is already, I mean, as you guys know from Ramon Urias, the Cardinals 40 man is always kind of a weird overlogged thing in the first place.
So then I got to ask you, he ends up finally signing with the Rays in December of 2020. Now, I don't know when you had seen that had happened, if you saw as it happened, but when you found out eventually that he was with the Rays, was the first thought, like many fans who see their former pitcher sign with the Rays, like, oh no, they're going to fix him and do what we could?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Oh, gosh, yeah. Yeah, I thought, oh boy, well, here we go. At least Chris Ellis will be in the major leagues for another 5 or 6 years. Good for him. Congratulations. He'll get some arbitration money. That makes me happy. And but I didn't, like, I didn't know what to expect, because, you know, as often as the Rays and, you know, a team like the Rays has a potential to turn those fringy guys into serviceable major leaguers, they just reach out and grab so many arms, and they try so many people that it's, you know, in the back of your mind, you're thinking, all right, this is just one of the arms they're trying out. They're going to see what they can get. And when I watched his appearance, and I did watch the majority of his appearance against the Orioles when he went strikeout crazy, I thought, oh, like the one mechanical change is his body has slowed down, but his arm is faster. And it seems like he's shorter. You know, a lot of relief pitchers in particular in baseball are shorter in their arm action. And so he seems shorter, but his arm seems faster without speeding up his entire mechanics. And I'm sure that the Rays had something to do with that.
Yeah. And, you know, he basically went almost exclusively fastball slider, which is obviously something the Rays love to have all their pitchers do as well in those four shutout innings against the Orioles. And, you know, it was easy for the O's to see what he could do now at the major league level as played a significant somewhat role in their 18-game losing streak as he pitched four innings of it against them. But Kyle, thank you so much for coming on the pod to tell us about Chris Ellis and his time in the Cardinals organization. And, you know, he is obviously a guy who has been around in a lot of orgs, but, you know, as I said earlier, still at the point where the Cardinals were his longest tenured team. And so I'm sure, you know, you and Cardinals fans are wishing him the best, but also wishing maybe that they could have done what we'll see if the Rays did somewhat fix him a little bit at this point.
Yeah, we're really rooting for him. I think that fastball, you know, being a little bit, the velocity being up, I think the slider being his primary secondary pitch and dropping in that change is going to make a world of difference. And I'm pulling for him and pulling for the O's too.
So we're back to the Orioles talk in just a second, but first got to tell you about betonline.ag. And, you know, baseball season is going bad for the Orioles. So I know a lot of you are looking forward to the Ravens season or Washington football team season or the Eagles season or whichever NFL team you may cheer for. And you might want to head over to betonline.ag as well. As always, BetOnline is your number one spot for all the pro and college football action this season. You can get all the updated odds, props, and contests, including BetOnline's biggest $500,000 NFL mega contest and the world's largest $200,000 NFL survivor contest open now at BetOnline. So head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today, and you can also receive a 100% welcome bonus. And be sure to take advantage of their opening day super promo. Make a bet on the Thursday, September 9th season opener between the Buccaneers and Cowboys. And if you lose, your wager will still be refunded up to $25 for new customers only when signing up and using the promo code NFL100. At BetOnline, it's the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. And again, go do it at betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. So our thanks again to Kyle Reese for joining us once again here on the podcast. He covers all things St. Louis Cardinals minor leagues over at Birds on the Black. You can find Kyle on Twitter at KyleR416. That is at KyleR416. He does a great job of covering the minor league system for the Cards, and a lot of gifts on his feed, kind of liking him to the BSL on the Verge of the Cardinals system. Great follow over there if you just like minor league baseball as well. Of course, he joined us last year during the season to talk about Ramon Urias when the Orioles first called him up. Of course, Urias was originally a waiver claim by the Orioles in the spring of last season from the Cardinals, and now they get Chris Ellis as well. And Urias has worked out pretty well. He's gone through a little slump recently, but he's starting to heat up with the bat once again. And we hope that although Chris Ellis didn't come directly from the Cardinals to the Orioles, that he works out as well. Now, we mentioned for Ellis that one appearance that came against the Orioles. Again, the four scoreless innings with seven strikeouts in relief to finish off that game. He did have one other major league appearance that we mentioned briefly. When the Royals took him in the Rule 5 draft in 2019, he pitched one scoreless inning that season in the major leagues and then was returned to the Cardinals, so he has two major league appearances overall. And his stats this year at AAA with Tampa Bay with the Durham Bulls, not great, but, you know, still solid in some ways. 15 appearances, 13 starts in Durham. Did have a 6.32 ERA in 57 innings. He allowed 40 runs on 61 hits. Now, he did strike out 58 batters in 57 innings, but he walked 28, which is not a great number walk-wise. And really what got him, he gave up 14 home runs in 15 appearances on the season. And that was the thing that really, really killed him, basically, so far this year, is the home run ball. And so hopefully that goes down, although usually goes up when you start pitching in Camden Yards. But again, you know, we would expect, although the Orioles haven't named an actual starter, Brandon Hyde has said tonight's game two will be a bullpen day for the Orioles, and we would expect Chris Ellis to not just pitch in this game, but he's got a chance to be the starting pitcher in this game. And frankly, you know, they're going to try to get those four innings out of him again, like he did in his one appearance with the Rays earlier this season. I mean, if he can give the Orioles four scoreless, I think that's best case scenario for the bullpen game tonight. Of course, in terms of other guys that are available for the Orioles, of course, with the off day on Monday, and then, you know, using some of the lesser relievers on Tuesday, Dylan Tate is pretty much ready to go, and he can go two innings if you need him. Tyler Wells is good to go. He's another guy who can go two innings if you need him. You can get an inning out of Tanner Scott after he has not pitched over the last couple of days. So even all that, if things go perfectly, can pretty much get you to the end of the line here if you are the Orioles. And you also have Jorge Lopez potentially available for an inning or so out of the bullpen as well, as he last pitched on Sunday. And other guys will be available for an inning if need be, but those are kind of the top names who, for the O's, you know, should be able to get them through tonight's bullpen game. And again, it will be a bullpen game for the Orioles, but it will not be for the Angels in tonight's game two of the three-game series, as get to the ballpark if you can, because Shohei Ohtani, the 27-year-old right-handed pitcher and sensation and most likely AL MVP here in 2021, is taking the mound for the Angels. Ohtani makes his 19th start of the year. He's got a 2.79 ERA and 120 strikeouts in exactly 100 innings of work this season. His last start was a dandy in Detroit back on August 18th. Eight innings, just allowed one run on six hits. He struck out eight and did not walk anyone in that one against the Tigers. And for Ohtani and the Orioles, this will be the first time that Shohei Ohtani has ever faced the Orioles as a pitcher. And of course, it'll be his first time pitching at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. Should be a somewhat good crowd to see Ohtani not just hit, but also pitch as well. You would expect, as they've done most times he started the season, that he would also be in the lineup hitting for himself. Just what an incredible player in the game right now, and just a joy to watch. And hey, if his dominance leads the Orioles to 20 consecutive losses, it definitely won't be by far the most painful one of the potentially 20 in a row. But we hope that we are back here tomorrow talking about a very surprising Orioles win. I gotta say, of all the games they could have won in this streak, I think the most surprising to win would be tonight, Ohtani versus the bullpen day. But before we go, I do have to tell you about another pod here on the network. That is Locked On Bets. And betting on Major League Baseball, it doesn't have to be a guessing game. If you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast, hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling, get daily picks, blowout specials, wrong team favored picks, and Lee Sterling's lock of the day. Follow the Locked On Bets podcast, brought to you by betonline.ag, wherever you get your pods. So again, we will be back tomorrow recapping game two of three between the Angels and the Orioles. Hopefully it is a W and the streak is over, but I don't see it coming against Shohei Ohtani. We will also continue to look at all the players the Orioles drafted in the 2021 MLB draft, and we are going to get to Billy Cook, 10th round outfielder out of Pepperdine, who's got some good power, some sneaky speed, and has played pretty well so far in his quick professional time with the Orioles. So we will get to him later in the week. We'll also talk about some other guys in the draft as well, as we get you through the last two episodes of the week. But again, we will be back tomorrow. Hopefully the losing streak is over by then. But until then, I'm Connor Newcomb, and this has been the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.